Welcome back to Palisade Radio. I'm your host, Tom Bodrovic, and joining me today is returning guest, David Brady. He's a money manager and spot money contributor and expert on all things gold and silver. How are you today, David?
I'm great, Tom. It's glad to be on again.
Great to have you back. I wanted to get you back to have a little bit of an update on your call for a little bit of a pullback here. Why don't we start by getting a little bit of a general update and we can dive into a couple specific things.
All right. Well, first of all, given the cacophony of noise in response to that call, first of all, let me say that I'm a medium to long-term bull in precious metals and miners and have been so since 2015. I mean, anybody who's followed me on Twitter since that knows that. You can also see in my articles on Sprott Money over the past 2 to 3 years. However, my process enables me to remain objective and avoid getting pushed around by what I call groupthink or herding. And it says the risks in the short term are to the downside. And I stress to the short term, And I'm basing that on multiple data points. And what do I mean by short term? I mean the next 2 to 3 months, not the next 2 to 3 days or 2 to 3 weeks. I'm not concerned about the daily noise. I'm concerned about the big moves. And why do I say next 2 to 3 months? Because I expect deflationary fears to soar again based on justified fears of renewed lockdowns, an escalating trade war with China. And this is all while the Fed is tapering its liquidity injections. The peak and fall in the stock market would confirm that those deflationary fears, in my opinion, and would likely weigh on precious metals and miners. So with that in mind, I just want to give that background because I get a lot of people saying he's wrong, it's going up and so forth, and you know he's been wrong before. Yeah, I can be wrong, but I've been long since 2015, and who's more objective, the guy who's perennially long or the guy who's long and says there's risk to the downside? That's called objectivity, and so I invest long term, but I trade both sides in the short term. That said, we are in an uptrend, and until we see a break of 1750, which is a key level for me in gold, we could see higher highs ahead of that. So why do I see a risk in the short term to the downside? Okay, so first of all, let's start with fundamentals. As I said back in 2017, the Fed returning to QE on steroids, a monetary insanity on steroids, I said, would mean that gold and silver are going to take off. Well, we've seen that. We're at the highest levels in 8 years. However, the Fed just tapered liquidity recently. We were at a $3 trillion run rate. We're down to a $1 trillion run rate. Meanwhile, the government's still spending more and creating more debt. So that is, by definition, a taper. Well, if massive money printing is the primary fundamental reason for higher precious metals and miners, what happens if they cut that liquidity? I don't disagree that going to go up much higher longer term, medium term. As I said, I'm a long-term bull. But in the short term, the risks are piling up to the downside. And secondly, technicals. We're seeing multiple negative divergences on the daily, weekly, and monthly charts. The monthly is the one that concerns me the most. I mean, the levels are at the highest since 2016, pre-drop in 2008, and a similar RSI peak as in 2006. Those drops, respectively, 2011 were 50%, 2008 were 35%, and 2006, 25%. And we're at the same levels of being overbought right now on the technical side. So to argue for a 5, 10, 15% pullback to me is not unreasonable, especially from these levels. And then let's talk about sentiment. Sentiment is the most bullish it's been since the 2011 peak. And this explains, and I also get confirmation of this on Twitter in response to my call for a pullback, because I got a whole number of cantankerous responses saying this time is different and so forth. That to me just emphasizes what the data is saying, and that sentiment is extraordinarily bullish. So you got technicals that are extreme overbought. You've got sentiment that's extreme bullish. You got the Fed tapering liquidity. And at the same time, now let's take a look at positioning. You've got the banks are still significantly short gold. Banks don't like to lose money. So for me, if when you add up all the various data points, they argue for a pullback in the short term. The trigger, and I say short term, over the next few months until September, October, when the Fed turns on the monetary spigots full blast again ahead of the November elections. And I noticed that the Treasury has built up a huge cash balance. Normally it's around $400 billion. It's now at $1.6 trillion, I believe. And to me, that tells me, as I've said publicly, that they're getting ready for a helicopter drop, whether it's infrastructure spending, tax rebates, checks in the mail, whatever it is ahead of the November election, all to enable Trump to get reelected, which, not to go too far down the rabbit hole, which will confirm my thesis that stagflation is going to begin towards the end of the year, because all that money is going straight into circulation in the economy. And meanwhile, the economy is going to continue to head south, given the lockdowns and the virus and so forth. But you got money being rained down on the economy, and stagflation begins, and then hyperstagflation thereafter in 2021 and 2022. Well, that's, if anybody remembers, the 1970s are the ideal conditions for gold and silver. But ahead of that, you're going to see deflationary fears rise, as those fears of lockdowns have already started, renewed lockdowns, and the Fed, as I said, is tapering liquidity. So the risk to me is that we're going to get deflationary fears rise, stocks go down, and with that, gold and silver suffer downside, and the miners too. Now, people will say, as I mentioned already, that the consistent response to my call for downside risk in the short term is that this time is different. We're in an uptrend. We're only going up. First of all, nothing goes up in a straight line. And yes, in an uptrend, the market can remain extreme bullish and overbought for quite a long period of time. But they rarely stay extreme bullish and extreme overbought beyond that. My point is that there is, for an uptrend to occur, the definition of an uptrend is higher highs and higher lows. Well, how do you get the higher low unless you get a pullback? You don't. And that's, those pullbacks are healthy in an uptrend. And I'll give you a whole range of data points. Pull up a weekly chart and look up these dates for pullbacks within an overall uptrend. So if you go back to, I'm just going to read them off here. May to June 2006, 23% drop. March to October 2008, 35% drop. February to April 2009, 14% drop. November 2009 to February 2010, 15% drop. June, July 2009, 9%, oh, sorry, 2010, 9% drop. December 2010 to January 2011, 9% drop. April to May 2011, 7% drop. And for those with short memories, fast forward, and that was, by the way, that was during the bull market from 2001 to 2011. I just went from 2006 on. There were plenty more before that. For those with short-term memories, let's skip forward to since the bottom in 2015. July, December 2016, 18% drop. April to July 2017, 7%. September to December 2017, 9%. January to August 2018, 13%. February to April 2019, 6%. September to November 2019, 8%. And then the drop in March was 15% alone. They're all in uptrends. So the idea that you don't get pullbacks in an uptrend is, how do I put this politely? Simply not supported by the evidence. I mean, you got so many data points. So this is, to me, where emotional bias is exposed most clearly. When you're at 8-year highs, you got extreme technicals, extreme sentiment, extreme positioning, and the Fed's not on your side. And yet everybody and their dog is still thinking it's going higher and are very emotional in response to any comments to the contrary. Look, guys, I'm long like the rest of you, but I focus on the data. I don't let emotion get caught up in the emotion. Could we go up a little higher? Sure, we could. We could even go to new all-time highs. But the higher we go, the bigger they are, the harder they fall. Meaning, the bigger the rally is before we get the fall, the bigger that fall is going to be. I'd rather see a pullback now of maybe down to 1750, which is the key level I'm watching, but more likely down to 1670, which is a big key level. If we go through there, 1400s. But if we go up to new all-time highs first, that correction will be bigger and sharper, in my opinion. And those are the ones that shake the weak longs out.
What I really appreciate about your analysis, David, is that you're looking at multiple data points and multiple ways of looking at, like you say, the objective data. So what kind of timing are we going to see for a rebound if we do hit, let's say, you know, nobody wants to see it, but the 1400 level? And is this possibly the last good buying opportunity before we really take off into real all-time highs?
Well, this is why, you know, it's a little disappointing that people get so upset about a call for a short-term pullback, because as I've also said whenever I say that, is that exactly that point. I believe that if and when this pullback occurs, or it's more likely when, that whatever level we bottom at will be the last buying opportunity, great buying opportunity you get in gold, silver, and the miners. Put a different way, you'll never see that price again, in my opinion. And the trigger for that, for me, is going to be the Fed turning on the monetary spigots again. In association with that, they're going to cap bond yields. And this is critical. They're going to cap bond yields because they can't afford the interest cost of the debt to go up dramatically, because the already insolvency of the U.S. government will become apparent to everybody, and then it's game over. So they will cap bond yields. When they do that, they cap real yields, which, if anybody goes back decades in gold and silver, gold in particular, you'll see that gold is inversely related to real yields. So when real yields are capped, i.e. they have an asymmetric risk to the downside, gold goes up. Now, why will they cap yields? Well, as I mentioned, ahead of the elections, I expect a helicopter drop from the government, the Treasury specifically, whatever form that may take. That money goes into circulations. Stagflation starts to begin. Well, you're going to see yields go probably spike higher, and that'll probably contribute to the downside in gold and silver. But the Fed will formally come out and formally state, in my opinion, that they're going to cap bond yields, much like the Bank of Japan did. And at that point, it's game over. Then gold and silver take off. And I think that will occur in the September-October timeframe, because we got the elections in November. They won't want to do this helicopter drop and kick off the money printing again the day before the election. They want to give it some time to sink in. And also, I do expect a drop in stocks here shortly. The peak is coming, and a significant drop. And then for that money printing to have effect and get us up back up to new all-time highs ahead of the election, you're going to need a month or two. So prefer levels over specific dates, but I think that September-October timeframe is going to be the bottom in stocks after the coming drop. And will be the bottom either at the same time or not long after gold and silver will bottom too. And then it's see ya time. You can start passing around the champagne at that point, because we'll all be trying to guess how high this is going to go. So again, I'm a long-term bull, mega bullish. But displaying my objectivity, there's a lot of data points, a lot of headwinds here in the short term that we have to be ready for. And I think if we do see stocks peak and start to fall, I think you're going to see gold and silver, well, maybe hang around for a bit, because yields might fall in concert to begin with. But when the Fed turns on the spigots again, you might see yields spike, which will contribute to the fall in gold and silver. But again, when they cap bond yields, that's it. It's game over. So not sure about specific timing of the drop in gold and silver, but given the divergences piling up on the sentiment and technical side, and given that the banks are still short positioning and want to get out of those shorts, I don't think it's going to take too much longer before we see some downside here. But thereafter, it's something we should all welcome, because you're going to be able to buy the last dip before the mega rally that follows, in my opinion.
Very interesting, David. Do you think that there's the same kind of contributing factors that are going to pile up into this next dip that we had in March, as in the second wave, lockdowns, stuff like that? And is it going to be as dramatic and pronounced as that one in March?
I think it's going to be more so. I've said this publicly on Twitter and in my articles. The Fed printed $3 trillion in the space of 3 months since March. I think they're going to blow through $10 trillion on the balance sheet. I mean, I've said that what happens next, the Fed is going to literally buy everything. And they're going to have to spend a lot of, print a lot of currency to do that. And when that happens, they'll also have to cap bond yields because it's going to be stagflationary. The economy is not going to benefit from any of this money printing. I mean, maybe in the short term, you get a little spike in retail sales. But, you know, the deterioration in the economy, given what's happening with these lockdowns, is going to continue. But it'll give temporary relief in the short term. But then they'll just, when it fades again, they'll just pile on even more currency, more helicopter drops on until they get people, they get the, as Mike Maloney pointed out years ago, until the retirees come out and start spending their 401k money in their IRAs, once they feel confident in doing so. And that's when hyperstagflation takes place. So to answer your question, when we get this next go round of Fed printing, I mean, you ain't seen nothing yet. It's just, you're going to see ludicrous amounts of money printed, in my opinion, on top of fiscal stimulus, which is basically MMT on steroids, which, if anybody, again, goes back to the 1970s stagflationary period, is just going to be music to gold bug and silver bug ears. I mean, it's gold and silver are just going to take off at that point. In a nutshell, the same, but much, much, much more so than in March.
Crazy times, David. Before we move on to the general equity markets, let's get your opinion on what silver could do when we see that bounce back up.
Well, I'd rather give what my conservative, it's based on empirical data that I'm getting from other people, that and what happened in Venezuela, where I think the number was, it went up 17,738 times or 438 times in 3 years. I just expected to go to $400, $500, conservatively speaking. But it could go up a whole lot higher here, because if gold's going to go to 5,000 or 10,000 or 50,000, you've got to look at the gold-silver ratio, and silver always outperforms gold in a bull market. In 1974 to 1980, in those 6 years, gold went up 24x. Silver went up 36x. In 2001 to 2011, gold went up 8x. Silver went up 12x. And the reason for that, it's the poor man's gold. When somebody goes down to the bank with their $2,000 and, you know, wants to buy some precious metals because they see what's happening, and they go into the teller and go, "Hey, I want to buy some gold. There's $2,000. And the teller looks at them, "That won't even get you 1 ounce of gold." "Well, what can I buy?" "Well, you can buy, you know, 50 ounces of silver." "Oh, take the silver." And so that's the reason why silver, when the mania really kicks in, just blows past gold. And with the gold and silver ratio reaching a record high of 120, 125 recently, now about around 100, I mean, the amount of investable silver on Earth relative to gold is 4 to 1. 4 ounces of silver investable. It's 8 ounces of physical, but silver is much more used in industrial practices than gold. So you take 50% of that production coming out of the ground away, you've only got 4 ounces of silver for every 1 ounce of gold. Markets tend to overshoot on the downside too when this gold silver ratio goes down. Could you see 1 to 1? Possibly, but I'll be conservative and say 20 to 1. We get down to on the downside. Well, if gold gets to, what, 10,000, that puts silver at $500 per ounce. So I don't think those numbers are ludicrous, but I'm looking, you know, 2 to 3 years out. But if we get a Venezuela-type hyperinflation, hyperstagflation in the U.S., I mean, who knows how high these things could go, because hard assets will be the most sought-after asset you can think of other than a farm.
When we're looking at gold and silver reacting like this, it seems to be almost a counterweight to the general equity markets. And I wanted to get your opinion on where we can see the S&P bonds and oil, like how all those things fit together and why oil seems to be more of an inflationary price signal to you.
Well, let me start with equities. I've said that, you know, China and Russia have been buying gold and silver. In the headlines, it's mostly gold for over 10 years. And I believe that they're doing that to hedge a crash in the dollar when the Fed prints, you know, the currency on steroids. Some would say they've already done it. What happens next is just going to blow people's minds. At what point, what size of the balance sheet do all people lose confidence in the dollar? Is it going to be 12 trillion, 14 trillion, 15 trillion, 20 trillion balance sheet at the Fed? At some point, people are going to, once they get their dollar, start spending them like hotcakes. When that occurs, gold and silver take off. But stocks love inflation. They're going to go through the roof as well. I believe ahead of my expectation for the Great Depression, the greatest depression to begin in 2023-24, that we're going to see a rally to new all-time highs. I said this back in January-February 2018, that we'd at least hit 4,000 on the S&P. We're not that far away from it now. Aside from the next pullback, once the next pullback is done in the S&P and the Fed turns on the spigots again, I expect we'll go up to that 4,000 mark. We could go a lot higher than that. So I see the two of those going hand in hand with one another. I see oil going to triple digits by 2021, latest 2022. And how can you say that given your views on the lockdowns in the economy and the deterioration in the economy? Well, demand is only one side of the equation when it comes to price. The other side is supply. And I see supply being curtailed by the Russians and the Saudis dramatically here in the next few months. And at the same time, you've got dollars, which oil is priced in, being printed into oblivion. Well, one of the reasons the 1970s occurred in the first place is the Arabs lost faith in the dollar and they started ramping up, you know, slashing supply to ramp up the price of oil in dollar terms because the dollar was being so heavily devalued. This was after the closure of the gold window in 1971. Well, what do you think is going to happen when the Fed turns on the monetary spigots full blast in September, October? You're going to see oil start to take off. Now, I do see oil, like stocks, have a pullback here coming to, I believe, around close the gap on a daily and weekly chart around $21 per barrel, go even a little below there. But then it's just going to take off from there. So I see a symbiosis develop between stocks, oil, gold and silver here over the next few months, downside ahead, but then they all go shooting higher. The biggest casualty, the dollar. That'll be the for me, that's the one that's going to get hurt when the Fed caps yields, bond yields, and the stocks and oil and gold and silver all take off. It's the dollar gets crushed. Now, bonds, they've gone sideways. They've done literally nothing except go sideways for a while. As you know, Craig Hemke pointed out, they're informally capping yields in the short term. Well, when the Fed turns on the monetary spigots again, and maybe even ahead of that, in September-October timeframe, that's going to put pressure to the upside on bond yields. And I think at that point, it'll make it easier for them to cap those bond yields by formally coming out and doing so, much like the BOJ did. Then you've got an asymmetric risk to the downside in bond yields, whether it's 1%, 1.5%, 0.5%, I don't know what it is. But I don't think bonds are a vehicle to invest in that's supposed to be a safe haven. But how is getting a coupon of 1%, 1.5% over the next 10 to 30 years against 5, 10, 20% inflation makes sense? It doesn't. You're going to lose so much money on a real basis. However, stocks will go up, but they won't do anything. They won't go up anywhere near as much as hard assets like gold and silver.
Interesting, David. Anything else you'd like to mention as we wrap up here?
No, I think we about covered it. I just wanted to say, until, you know, I'll give some levels that I'm looking at on the downside. As I said, we could still see some further upside, but, you know, again, eventually these data points that I'm looking at catch up to whatever asset they're covering. In this case, it's gold, silver, and the miners. And whether we go higher or not in the short term, I'm not concerned about the daily noise and a few pips here or there. I play the big moves. They will catch up to gold and silver here soon. Do I know when? Do I know which exact level? No. But the levels, if you want to, you know, preserve some of the gains that you have, if you see 1750 break on gold on the downside, that's probably time to cut and run. Below there, 1670 is critical to avoid a drop down to the 1400s. I mean, you could see 1660, 1650, and then it go back up being a false breakdown. But, you know, that's an area to watch if we get through 1750. The levels in silver, 18, 17, and 16. 16 is a must hold in silver. On the upside, you've got massive resistance at 19. We could break through 19 and everybody gets all bowled up and then down it goes. The banks like to, you know, pull the rug out from traders once everybody gets deliriously euphoric about the silver or gold. GDX 312030 is a huge level on the downside. And then you got 1025 and SILJ, which is my favorite vehicle to play longer term in the silver space and in the metals miner space from a trading perspective overall. Because if silver is going to outperform gold and miners are going to outperform the metals and juniors are going to outperform the seniors, SILJ is your only place, only port of call. You know, individual miners aside, I don't like company specific risk. But when this next bottom comes, I'm going to be loading up on SILJ. But it went up 150% in the space of weeks after the March low. I can only imagine what it's going to do when the next low hits. But until those levels break, particularly 1750 in gold, yeah, we can still go higher in the short term. But sentiment, technicals, fundamentals, positioning are all working against us. And if I was playing a game of poker and I had a full house in my hand, I'd feel pretty confident that I was going to win the pot. The odds are in my favor. But, you know, could I be wrong? Yeah. But, you know, law of averages says I win, you know, the odds are on your side. If the odds are on your side, you'll win out most of the time. But, you know, sometimes you're going to lose. Somebody will have a straight flush and you're toast. But the odds are against us for a move much higher versus the risk to the downside if we do go much higher. Because given all of these things piling up, we could go higher. And the higher we get, the bigger the fall, the subsequent fall thereafter, if we do go to 1923, 1950, in my opinion. However, if we get a pullback now, that's much healthier because it'll be smaller in nature and enable us to go higher thereafter, because these bullish conditions and overbought conditions always get corrected in an uptrend. They always do. I gave you multiple data points earlier on. Just go back and look at the chart for those dates. And then the market marches higher again. That's what lower highs are all about. Or sorry, higher lows are all about. It's, you know, maintaining the uptrend. But if we don't get that correction sooner rather than later, it just means that the correction, when it does come, will be more violent to the downside. And I just wanted your listeners to be aware of that because, you know, put emotion aside for a second. The data is working against us even and even more so the more we go up.
Perfect, David. I think that's a great way to conclude. Of course, we can find you at Global Pro Trader on Twitter and your Sprott Money articles as well. Anywhere else?
No, I mean, that's mainly it, but I'm fairly active on Twitter. I try only to tweet only when it's meaningful these days. And I post my articles on Sprott Money on a weekly basis. There's a comment section there if anybody has any questions or queries.
Perfect. Thanks for your time today, David. We really appreciate it.
Thanks, Tom. I really appreciate you having me back on.
This podcast is for general informational purposes only. Nothing on this podcast should be taken as investment advice. Guests on this show are not compensated for their appearance. Listeners are urged to educate themselves and make their own decisions. Do not base any investment decisions on the information contained. To view our full disclaimer, please visit our website.
Think you understand the junior mining sector and you think that the participants in the mining sector, junior mining sector, are good people and kind people, hit the bid.
How violent that term could be, it actually could be quite violent. It could be a rip your face off uranium rally.
And the world is always going to need raw material. It's going to need copper and gold and nickel and so forth.
Totally destabilized. Hey! Hey, troll, did you hear what's going on in Yemen?